Recorded Books and RB Digital present The Devouring by James R. Benn. Narrated by Peter Burkrot. In Memory of Ranger, 2002 to 2016. Faithful Companion, by my side for 12 Billy Boyle novels. When gold speaks, every tongue is silent. Italian proverb. Chapter 1. Light is faster than sound. Strange, the things you think about when you're about to die. Even as tracers lit the night air, their silent, silvery phosphorescence clawing at our small aircraft from the ground below, a tiny part of my brain mused on this practical demonstration of that scientific fact. The rest of my brain panicked madly, sending surges of adrenaline coursing through my body, urging me to get the hell out, now. Which was not at all helpful, given that we were flying at 500 feet, heading directly into heavy anti-aircraft fire, making 180 miles per hour. Then came the sound, the chattering of ack-ack fire. Flak exploding in blinding flashes all around us. Shrapnel struck the aircraft, rending the metal, sounding like the devil's own hailstorm on a sheet metal roof. "Hold tight!" shouted the pilot, as he dove the Lysander and put it through twists and turns to evade the lead rising up against us. I looked below as he dipped the airplane, and saw the twinkling of automatic fire from along the stretch of river we'd been following. "They're on the road!" I shouted to the pilot in the single front seat. It was a column of German vehicles, moving at night to avoid Allied aircraft, and we'd flown dead at them. The pilot didn't waste breath answering. He banked left, violently, diving to treetop level at a right angle away from the river. Looking back, I saw tracer fire searching vainly for us, then fade as the Krauts gave up and continued on their way. The Lysander jolted, loud thumps whacking against the aircraft frame.
"Sorry, chaps," the pilot muttered, pulling back on the yoke and gaining altitude. "Almost landed in the pines. She's a bit sluggish. Might have put some shrapnel in the rudder."
He banked the Lysander, bringing us around to the river again, the only map to our destination.
"There may be other columns on the road," Kaz said, adjusting his steel-rimmed spectacles.
Even after nearly being blown out of the sky and tossed around inside the cramped Lysander, he managed to sound nonchalant, his precise English leavened with the slightest of Polish accents.
"The Somme River is our only landmark," the pilot said, "Jerry's travel plans notwithstanding. If we veer off to the east, we run the risk of entering Swiss airspace. It'd be damned embarrassing to be shot down by the Swiss, after all."
"Why?" Kaz asked.
"You know the Swiss. Chocolate, watches and sheep. That's what they're famous for. I'd never hear the end of it, if I lived to tell the tale.
Personally, I'd choose death by chocolatier if I had any say in the matter," Kaz responded.
Switzerland was our ultimate destination, and we weren't in the market for wristwatches.
"Don't worry about the Swiss or the Jerrys," the pilot said. "I haven't lost a Joe yet, and I don't plan on starting tonight."
We were his Joes. It was what special operations executive pilots called the agents and commandos they flew into occupied Europe. No names, nothing to reveal if captured and tortured. Just an anonymous one-way ride to some grassy field in the countryside. In a few minutes we were back on course, flying low over dark hills and a glistening waterway, the bright half-moon at our backs providing a tempting target for alert Kraut gunners, the river our only guide.
"What's the next landmark?" I asked the nameless pilot. "We'll bear left at the Rhone River in Lyon. There's a sharp bend in the river. It'll be easy to spot, even with only a half-moon. Then Lake Gris, a narrow lake about 12 miles long. I set us down outside of Cesson in a nice open field on a ridge overlooking the water. A bit tricky, but very secluded."
Tricky I didn't mind, if it meant no Krauts.
We flew on, no sign of movement below us.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?